nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m. and you're listening to all Bye Bye Middle Third Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things on this program. You can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And when you get up there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top of it, there will be a link that says Latest Back of the Book Program Links. Click on that, and you'll get to the web page for this program. We do a new web page for each and every program. We got a whole bunch of web pages up there. And the WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 56th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday mostly for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the big international, intergalactic story of the week is... we are again holding at 112 followers on Twitter. Oh, the whole universe trembles at that giant number of Twitter followers. And a program note, next week we'll be celebrating the 35th anniversary of this radio program. Wow, 35th anniversary, which means that when this program is done, we will have completed 35 years of radio programs, 35 years of back-of-the-book radio programs. That's... interesting to have there. And the next public WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held on Wednesday, September 8th, 2021 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And there are elections going on. Yes, we have elections going on for delegates to the local station boards. And yeah, I know you're getting a whole lot of election stuff happening, what with that referendum. And we're really glad that overwhelmingly people in WBAI land voted against it because that saved this radio station. There are people who want to take WBAI and sell it. Well, some of what they were doing was probably trying to put you off from voting in the delegates election, because there are also people running in the delegates election who want to give WBAI away to a certain other entity. And that would be pretty much the same as selling it, and it would be gone forever. So I can't be more specific than that, but I can say you should start doing your research and figure out who would be in favor of keeping WBAI alive and not either selling it or giving it away. And according to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole wide world reached 215,085,787 on Friday, and global deaths reached 4,480,877. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 38,004,000. 481,005, and the death toll in America had reached 634,349. So, 8,589 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. The death rate in America has fallen a little bit this past week, but it's still very high. Unvaccinated area rates are supplying the victims of most of the deaths. More states with low vaccination rates are reporting that 100% of their intensive care unit beds are taken. About 18% of adult Americans are hard and fast against getting vaccinated. Meanwhile, so-called breakthrough infections in fully vaccinated people still only account for about 0.1% of the hospitalizations. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. Dr. Fauci is saying that if we're lucky, we may come out of the pandemic next spring. And again, this was all mostly preventable. More instances of people denouncing the vaccines and mask wearing and then dying of COVID-19 are happening. Last Saturday, 61-year-old Phil Valentine, a right-wing talk radio host who mocked coronavirus vaccines, changed his tone after getting sick. And he died after a month-long battle against COVID-19. He had said that hospitals were never really in danger of being overwhelmed with COVID patients. In the hospital, before he died, he said that COVID-19, quote, hurts like crap, unquote. And Pickles of the North is here with a report on, well, certain things happening and quackery. And, take it away, Pickles.
I've been looking at the National Institutes of Health website. There was a lot of well-researched information there about all kinds of medical studies and clinical trials, past, ongoing, and those being planned. Since the pandemic was declared, I've been mainly reading up on COVID-19. Knowledge is power, right? And also there is ongoing turmoil in my family between the willingly vaccinated, the grudgingly vaccinated, and the anti-vaccination pro-aromatherapy proponents. There was an article on PubMed Central, which is a free full-text archive. They've got all kinds of biomedical and studies like that. It was written by a lawyer named Ian Freckleton in July of 2020. And it's entitled COVID-19, Fear, Quackery, False Representations, and the Law. In it, he writes, quote, fear, anxiety, and even paranoia can proliferate during a pandemic. Such conditions, even when subclinical, tend to be a product of personal and predispositional factors, as well as shared cultural influences, including religious, literary, film, and gaming, all of which can lead to emotional and less than rational responses. They can render people vulnerable to engage in implausible conspiracy theories about the causes of illness and governmental responses to it. They can also lead people to give credence to simplistic and unscientific misrepresentations about medications and devices which are claimed to prevent, treat, or cure disease. In turn, such vulnerability creates predatory opportunities for the unscrupulous, unquote. He also writes about remedies people took during prior pandemics like bronchial inhalers, electric batteries, castor oil, and booze, still popular and in its methyl form killing people during our pandemic, different kinds of food, and something called a carbolic, which is phenol, smoke ball, which you squeezed with your hands and inhaled. Yikes. All this during the Russian flu epidemic, which was from 1889 to 1892. The approximate death toll for that was 1 million people. During the 1918 flu pandemic, at the time called the Spanish flu, people took things used for malaria and heart ailments and other conditions, quinine, digitalis, aspirin. Also deadly poisons like strychnine. And more booze mixed into toxic concoctions or just in overdose amounts. Or quinine lozenges up the butt. and carbolic soap to scrub away both germs and your skin. And a eucalyptus oil-based product still being rubbed on chests today. Here are the 1918 flu infection and death toll numbers from the National Archives website. Quote, the virus infected roughly 500 million people, one-third of the world's population, and caused 50 million deaths worldwide, double the number of deaths in World War I, unquote. Regulation for cures and preventives have barely begun at that time, so people who may have survived influenza died of their preventive measures or from their choice of cure. Which brings us to today's COVID-19 pandemic. Over 213 million people infected worldwide and over 4.5 million deaths so far. Both numbers are certainly undercounts and still growing. One of our dear friends wrote to me and said that although she was reticent, she felt it was her civic duty to get vaccinated to keep others and herself safer. This was in response to my telling her about my family conflict. I agreed with her completely. It's a civic duty that protects those who are too young to be vaccinated and the immunocompromised. And that brings me to something that's being presented by some family members as a better and safer alternative than the COVID-19 vaccines, aromatherapy and its essential oils. Essential oil was a term used by Paracelsus von Hohenheim, a 16th century Swiss doctor, alchemist, and a seer. Oh, brother. Well, even Newton practiced alchemy. These oils are natural selection in action, something plants produce to protect themselves by fending off bugs that want to eat them and attracting bugs that can help with pollination. Up on PubMed, you can find reports of research that has been done about the efficacy of the use of essential oils as a treatment for a variety of conditions. Some plant oils have known antiviral and anti-inflammatory properties for specific conditions. Some seem to be promising, but need to undergo much more rigorous, larger, and more complex studies. Studies regarding their use vis-a-vis SARS-CoV-2 are very, very preliminary. One of the reports calls it shreds of preliminary scientific evidences. So they're going to study it some more. They're going to see if it can be used at all in any kind of application towards SARS-CoV-2. However, because they did these preliminary investigations, they call it computer docking, which I had to look up and see. That's where they do stuff just completely in the computer with algorithms and see how a protein will act against something else. But it's not out in the real world. You know, it's not like giving this to people. So there's a lot of steps you go through for this kind of research. Well, when they put the preliminary findings up online, all these companies and all these proponents of aromatherapy went to town with this, and they started putting out information saying, our oils cure COVID-19. Our oils prevent COVID-19. The Food and Drug Administration did not take kindly to this, and they started issuing warning letters. I mean, you can go up online to the Food and Drug Administration's website and read some of these letters, because it's really something to see the claims that are being made. It's very disturbing, and it's much like the carbolic smoke ball up the nose. There are a lot of scam artists who make powerful claims and say they are substantiated by science, or true believers who misinterpret preliminary research as a fait accompli, proving their claims for alternative prevention and cure of COVID-19. We don't have all the numbers yet for people privileged enough to have easy access to vaccines who have been made ill or died from taking these preventions and cures based on false and misinformation, chicanery, superstition, and pseudoscience. It's especially troubling when so many desperate people worldwide don't have the same access to those vaccines and are preyed upon by proponents of false remedies. And I think it's about as far from civic duty as you can get.
Yeah, there's a lot of quackery and people trying to make money off COVID-19. This always happens. This always happens. And so it's happening again. Not an unpredictable thing. But speaking of quackery, in Arkansas, they're investigating the people who run the Washington County Jail there. Those people have been prescribing the anti-parasite drug ivermectin as a remedy for COVID-19, despite the drug not having been approved for treating COVID-19. The Washington County Sheriff's Office, which apparently runs this jail, confirmed to reporters that some inmates were in fact prescribed ivermectin. Currently, it's not even known if all the inmates who were prescribed ivermectin had tested positive for COVID-19. A doctor named Amy Embry said that, quote, "There is an open investigation and we can't comment on it right now." Ivermectin is only approved for infestation by certain types of parasitic worms, head lice, and other skin conditions. And there are apparently different formulations for humans and animals. The doctor at this jail, Dr. Rob Karras, is saying that he did not force any inmates to take the drug. He released a written statement that says in part, quote, "I do not have the luxury of conducting my own clinical trial or study, and I'm not attempting to do so," unquote. Well, that's interesting. Does he know that there's a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention? Does he know that there are people who are doing tests of all sorts? Is he that uninformed, or can he just not see past Washington County, Arkansas? And Dr. Karras continued in his statement saying, quote, "I am on the front line of trying to prevent death and serious illness," unquote. Or did he mean trying to cause instead of trying to prevent? I don't know. This is quackery. Dr. Karras says that he and his family have taken ivermectin, and he reportedly recommended that the sheriff's staff take ivermectin as a preventive measure against COVID-19. And we're seeing it reported that about 88,000 prescriptions for ivermectin have been filled in the space of 2 weeks. And calls to poison control centers about ivermectin are generating about 5 times higher call volume than normal. Yes, I think cause and effect going on right there. Health officials in Arkansas and Mississippi are warning the public to especially avoid taking the ivermectin that's made for animals. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has warned doctors against prescribing ivermectin to treat COVID-19. The CDC says that no evidence supports the medicine being used for any other reason besides its manufactured intentions. I suppose that from his statement, Dr. Karras wants us to believe that just because he inflicted ivermectin upon himself and his family, that we're to say, oh, well, then it's okay that he take these prisoners. You know, how much consent do prisoners get to give? Even if he's not like having the jail guards grab them and, you know, give them this, I don't know if it's an injection or oral medication or a suppository or what. Even if they're not forcing it by the guards, if you're a prisoner and the guy says, "Hi, I'm the doctor in this jail," and he walks up to you, well, you know, he's got a lot of authority, and you may think that he says, "And I'm going to give you this." You may not know that that's something you cannot consent to. You could say, "I don't want that noise, Jack." You don't know that. And we don't know what he's saying. He may be telling them anything. This is terrible stuff. These prisoners are fish in a barrel for quacks like this. And Jesus H. Christ, I think maybe there needs to be a federal investigation here. I'm not at all sure that I would trust Arkansas to come up with, you know, figuring out this is a bad thing to do. But Jesus Christ. And here in New York, we are welcoming our first female governor of the state of New York, Kathy Hochul. And this is because Mario Cuomo left office this past week. And who knows if we'll ever see him again. Some people are saying that since he didn't get impeached and he still has friends in various places, he may run for public office again. I don't know. Most of these people who do these things have pretty big egos, and being governor, what would he run for? Dog catcher somewhere? I don't know. I mean, is he going to be elected something in Queens? That would be a step down, and these guys mostly don't take a step down. Anyway, Cuomo is gone. Hochul is in, and she's endorsing the eviction moratorium. And speaking of which, good grief, the Supreme Court has made a ruling that may result in literally millions of Americans becoming homeless in the next couple of months. That is horrendous. That is a terrible thing to have done. And it shows what happens. I mean, you know, they were put in there by what? A thieving real estate guy named Donald Trump. Oh, what a coincidence. They were put in there by Trump, and they're making rules to evict Americans. Can the Democrats get together enough folks to have Congress pass a law enabling the eviction moratorium to go forward for a while at least? I should pitch a little bit right here. Okay, this is WBAR New York, and this is listener-sponsored non-commercial radio. What we do here is we do not run advertisements on the air. Well, now and again we do, but, you know, it's strange kinds of ones. Ones from, like, I don't know, 70 years ago. Yeah, I have a few from 70 years ago. Anyway, we are not sponsored by, you know, car makers or other things like that. We have listener sponsors. That's you. You, the listener. You can be our sponsor. Overwhelmingly, our revenue comes from listener sponsors who say, yeah, I want to support WBAI. I would like WBAI to keep broadcasting, and so you help by making a donation to this radio station. And right now, I'm going to ask if you could please get up, go to the phone, or you don't have to get up. Some of you have the phone right next to you in bed, and just dial 1-212-209-2950, and you'll get a call center, and tell the person who picks up at the call center that you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And BAI buddy is the name we give to our sustaining membership. And a sustaining membership is one where you donate monthly a certain set amount. And so what you do is you call up 1-212-209-2950 and you say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And then you tell them how much you would like to donate every month. You can donate $5 a month or $10 a month or $15 a month or $20 a month or more if you please. And you also tell them what day of the month you would like to be charged. And on that day of the month, they will charge your credit card or your debit card the amount you have specified. And so that way it's convenient for you. There are some days that are more convenient than others to have your card charged. And so you get to pick which day you want it done on. 1-212-209-2950. And if you would call that number and say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, you'll be able to become a BAI buddy. And right now, from what the general manager put out only 2 weeks ago or so, we only have two BAI buddies for this radio program. One of those BAI buddies, thank you, Pat, has been a BAI buddy of this radio program for years and years. And so we're not picking up a whole lot of new BAI buddies here, it seems. We need to do that because management is paying attention. As I said, they're putting out lists of what program has how many BAI buddies. And let's just say that with two, we are not at the top of this list. So we need to get some of you folks to support WBAI by calling 1-212-209-2950. We're on here. We talk about COVID-19 in a realistic way, what we think is a realistic way. And we talk about it in terms of the science and in terms of what's really going on. And yeah, we talk about the Johns Hopkins website information. And we do that because it's real. It's stuff that we know about. It is tracking the pandemic. This pandemic is going to be one of the biggest things in all of our lives. This is a lot like the pandemic of 1919 or so, and which, yeah, they call it the Spanish flu, but I prefer not to call it that, because the reason it got called the Spanish flu was because in the World War I was going on, and in the Allied countries and also in Germany, they didn't want to mention that it was there, because that would give the enemy information you don't want to give the enemy. However, Spain was not at war. Spain was a neutral country. Spain printed in its newspapers, hey, there are these people getting sick. It's influenza. Wow, this is bad. And that's how it became known as the Spanish flu. So it most likely didn't start there. We don't know where it started. I know some people think it started in America. I think that's shaky evidence. I don't know. I can't say for sure. But that was a big deal, that pandemic. Well, this is just as big a deal, it looks like. And even though we have modern medicine and we can save a lot of people who would have died without modern medicine, back in 1919, they didn't have ventilators. They didn't have various different kinds of medications to give people. They couldn't put somebody into a medically induced coma. There was a lot of stuff they couldn't do back then. And so more people would be dying like crazy without modern medicine. And of course, we have a vaccine. They didn't have that in 1919. They were still unable to really come to grips with any virus back in 1919, at least in terms of really figuring it out. Whereas here we got the genome of the virus. They couldn't do that. They didn't know there was DNA back in 1919. So we talk about these things. We talk about them scientifically. And yeah, we do come down on the anti-vaxxer position because it's deadly. And, yeah, not everybody at BAI agrees with that. And at BAI, we get to disagree with each other over various issues. This is one of them. So, on back of the book, we do talk about COVID-19, and we talk about the science, and we urge everybody to get vaccinated. The two of us are vaccinated, and it looks like in a very short while, we'll be getting our booster shots. So, if you want to hear science of all sorts, not just about the vaccinations and all of that, we also do astronomy, we do geology, we talk about ancient things that happened millions of years ago. If you want to hear the science stuff from us, please contribute. Call 1-212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. And say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. That would help us out a lot, and it would really be good. And you will keep us on WBAI, and you will keep WBAI on the air, because we need more listener sponsors, and we need more BAI buddies. Again, 1-212-209-2950. Call the number. Tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. You can choose to make a monthly donation of $5 or $10 or $15 or $20 a month, and you can tell them when you want it charged off your card. All right, I hope some of you will do that, and thanks for listening. And here we are in late summer. And yes, late summer happened last Sunday at 6:32 in the morning. So our previous program was the last program in midsummer of 2021, and now we're in the late summer of 2021, and we're also saying goodbye to August. And in saying goodbye to August, we say goodbye to the middle third. The middle third is my favorite time of the year. It consists of the months of May, June, July, and August. It's the middle third of the year. And so it's usually got the best weather, although right now we're sitting here sweating like mad in the living room, and oh boy, because we can't have the fan on, or otherwise you'd hear the fan blasting away on this recording. So we're suffering through a lot of sweat right here. And Pickles reminds me that in this middle third, we only went out for fun once. We went to Coney Island one time in this four-month period because the Delta variant has shown up, and we're concerned about it. And if I were to get the Delta variant, you know, if it were able to force a breakthrough infection in me, I might have a very hard time because I'm an old fart and I've got all sorts of medical conditions. And so, yeah, that would be bad news. But the middle third will end. It will end with the start of September on this coming Wednesday. So this coming Wednesday, when September 1st happens, we will be saying, oh, goodbye, middle third. That's it. And this is like the second middle third that's been crushed by the pandemic. This is not good news, but it's what's happening. And I guess we should be glad we're alive.
Glad we're alive and living in a pretty stable society. So that's good.
Well, yeah, there are worse societies, as we'll talk about shortly.
And September can be a lovely month. So
it can be. Although the best months are the middle third months. But yes, and so, of course, autumn will come up in September and we'll be in a whole nother time. But yes, for most of September, it will still be summertime, although it can be a little fall-like in September summertime. Late summer can share a lot with early autumn. Oh, well, we hope that things are going to work out through it all. But yes, a fond farewell to the second pandemic middle third. Wish we could have gotten out more in it, but, you know, gotta be careful. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. We're living in interesting times, and part of the interesting time is that in the middle of a pandemic and everything else, we have Afghanistan happening. And again, in Afghanistan, the singular of a person from Afghanistan is Afghan. The plural is Afghans. And they make this mistake of calling them Afghanis on the CBS Evening News, and even Biden called them Afghanis yesterday. Oh, my godlessness. This is bizarre stuff. And so, yeah, more people are chiming in saying, yeah, part of the problem here is that we went to Afghanistan and said, we'll give you a democratic nation state, whereas these are tribal people who are loyal to their tribe, and they've been propagandized from birth in that superstition started by a guy named Abu Qasem ibn Abdullah, and they mostly know very little or nothing about things outside of their tribe's territory. And those tribes, and there are a lot of them, have been fighting with each other for thousands of years. It's like a big family, a set of families. That's what a tribe is. And, you know, sometimes they intermarry and they trade daughters. Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. And, you know, they try to have peace for a while. Then somebody gets pissed off at somebody else and they start cutting each other's throats. And so they just go back and forth. And this year they're allies with, you know, one tribe and they're against another. Next year, there's a fourth tribe that they're allied with and are against the other two there. Oh, boy. You know, so it's very confusing. And if you don't live amid it, it's hard to figure out. And so it's all tribal. And they've been fighting a lot. So hate groups like the Taliban, ISIS, and Al-Qaeda, they offer young men a chance to see the world and oppress it. And, you know, if you're a young man being brought up in this, you say, Jesus, you know, this is kind of oppressing to me because there are all these rules and I can't do this and I can't, I'm getting horny, but I can't do anything about it because the tribe, one, our religion says I can't do anything about it. And two, the tribe determines whom I can have sex with and when. And so I gotta wait because this other guy isn't married yet. And until he becomes married, I can't become married. And I'm not gonna get to pick whom I get to marry. So, oh boy, this is a lot of fun being a young man in the tribe. And so they get a little bit obstreperous, although they generally don't break out too much because the tribe has learned to keep young men in line. And so, these hate groups like Taliban, ISIS, and Al-Qaeda, they say, hey, come join us and you'll see the world and you'll get to commit rape a lot, which is really what they do. And, you know, you'll be able to also cloak that in, oh, I'm doing this great religious stuff. You know, you'll get to commit religious rape in the name of your God. And this is what they feed to them. And they say, oh, that's better than standing around here being horny all day. So some of these tribal young men jump at the chance to join these hate groups. To a degree, it's a lot like a street gang in an American city. You get the young and they're restless and you say, hey, you want to go steal things and do bad stuff and sell drugs? Oh, yeah, okay, and then I'll have money and I'll be able to do what I want. Same kind of a thing. So, yesterday to us, Thursday now for you, 13 Americans died in a bombing and something like 60 plus Afghans died. Many people were wounded. And now we have new players in all of this. It was done, the bombing was done by this ISIS-K group, which is taking responsibility for the bombing on Thursday. The K stands for Khorasan, which is the part of Pakistan that this particular bunch of creeps originated their hate group in. And they used to be a part of the Taliban, but they found that the Taliban weren't strict enough, and apparently they weren't quite murderous enough for these young men. So they quit the Taliban and joined ISIS Khorasan, or ISIS-K, which sounds like a poisonous breakfast cereal, I think. Luckily, the Taliban and ISIS-K, which also sounds like a street drug, are enemies. So after we get the hell out of Afghanistan, they'll mostly have each other to kill, and I'm sure they'll do a lot of that. I'm sure the world will see many awful videos from each side as they brutalize each other and oppress the Afghan population, especially the Afghans who have been able to rise up out of the muck of tribalism and start participating in the big wide world. Yeah, the Taliban says they're going to be nice now. I don't believe those people. I'm hearing variously on news reports that America spent $2 point something trillion in the 20-year war. So the price of this war in terms of money keeps going up. And huge amounts of equipment, you know, we left there. We gave it to the Afghan military and then they ran away. And that stuff is going to be in the hands of the Taliban. And I'm sure we're going to be seeing that stuff being used by the Taliban and ISIS-K to kill each other. And I'm hoping they didn't leave like a lot of man pads around there. That's the man-mounted anti-aircraft rockets, which all you need, if you have one of those, you get a guy, he sees a plane and he shoots at it. It just doesn't have infinite range, but he can shoot at the plane and shoot it down. And I wonder, I hope there aren't any of those left there, because then they would be able to make money, and they want to make money, by exporting those to others. And they're in contact with other groups that are killing people. And we could see planes getting shot down around the world with American anti-aircraft rockets. Certainly, we're going to be seeing American equipment, military equipment, getting used in this war and probably in other places. I'm sure they will have no problem selling American military equipment to the rest of ISIS and other players in that area of the world. And I sure hope that something happens so that they don't really have much of an air force. And regular listeners will know that I tend to talk about things from the past a bit. And part of what I do sometimes is talk about what happened 50 years ago if I was involved in it. And I don't know, I think part of this is simply that I'm a bit amazed that I was, that I can say that I was doing such and such 50 years ago. And it just does amaze me. Anyway, 50 years ago would be August 1971. And I haven't talked about this in the exact date order it happened during these programs, but that's why, since this is our last program of August, I think I want to catch up now. And in August 1971, I became the chair of the Police Power Committee of the Gay Activists Alliance. That was like, oh, that was a big thing for me. And Police Power was the name of a book that was published in the late 60s that showed that the police can become a separate and largely unregulated branch of the government, or even be considered sort of a separate government all on their own. And so that was the origin of the GAA committee's name. I hadn't known that when I got there, because the book came out while I was in the Army, and I never heard of it until people were talking about it and naming this committee. But I got on the committee, and I started doing stuff. And I'd been on the committee since its inception in 1970, and I became noted for writing down details of police actions, including badge numbers and the names of cops, which, gee, they were so pleased that I did that. And, you know, they'd do, like, raids on places, and they would do things to people. They would raid the trucks where I'd happen to be, and they would do all sorts of various things, or some cop would start, you know, hollering, "Oh, you faggots, get off the street," and stuff like that. And I would write this down, and we were able to make complaints. And it wasn't just a, "And this cop started hollering, you know, using the word faggots and calling gay people names," and leave it at that, you know, because then the police and everybody else will say, "Yeah, and what are the details?" "Well, we just told you to do it." "Well, no, you need more." "Well, then they say officer such and such with badge number this said this at this date and time at this specific location." Well, that adds a lot more credibility to your complaint. And so I used to do that, and, you know, I would report these things. And mostly what happened was I gave the information to other people, because you had your stars and your spokespeople. I wasn't one of them. And however, I could do this stuff and contribute. And so I'd been on the committee. I had been on the committee for, oh, gosh, I guess more than a year at that point. And so the chair had left, and the chairpersonship was open. So I walked into a committee meeting that had been packed by a guy who was opposing me for the opposition of chair. He wanted to be chair, and I hadn't even known he wanted to be. He hadn't been on the committee very much. He'd been on the committee for like 2 weeks, but he had invited people in, and we had these people there who were there purely to vote for him. And so anyway, I was almost 24. He was 48. And he would later become an anti-gay evangelist who had a ministry that converted gay men and boys to heterosexuality. He ended up getting thrown out of his own church and ministry for giving the cuter men and boys who came to him to be saved a form of stimulation that his wife and fellow church members did not think was exactly in line with stopping homosexuality. And nobody, he wasn't doing that yet, but he did that a couple of years after this. In fact, this kind of put him into a spiral because I walked in and other GAA members were there, and instead of voting for him as he'd planned on, they voted for me, and I got elected to be the chair of the Police Power Committee of the Gay Activist Alliance, which, you know, was sort of a big deal for me. So other things were happening also in August 1971. On August 8th, 1971, Bobby Fischer, who eventually became chess champion of the world, he played a rapids tournament at the Manhattan Chess Club. This thing was set up specifically for Bobby. It was a fundraiser. I didn't have to contribute money because I was a member, and I was there. And this was a fundraiser, and Bobby won all but one of his games, and that game was a tie with somebody. So he really, and these weren't slobs. And it's blitz, and blitz is 5-minute chess, although it may have been 7-minute because the Manhattan Chess Club was really adamant that when we ran a blitz tournament, it was 7 minutes, not 5 minutes. There was a chess clock, and you on the chess clock, you got 7 minutes. Each side got 7 minutes, and there's a little thing called a flag on the clock, and when it falls, your time is up. And if you haven't made your move yet and it falls, you lose the game. Doesn't matter what the position is. If you go over time, you lose the game. And so I forget if it was 5 minutes or 7 minutes, but he was there and he crushed these people. You know, this is like really tremendous. And he was doing tremendously then. He had beaten 2 international grandmasters of the highest order. He had blanked them 6-0. In matches just before this. And so he was doing tremendously right then and there. And so he went there and he gave his performance. I mean, it was, everybody played, anybody could have won this thing, but he won. And so I got to be there. You will sometimes see some photographs because there were a couple of photographers there, and you'll see photographs, mostly black and white, as I recall, up online. You won't see any pictures of me at it. This is because I was wearing my gay power button, and even though I was standing at the front, people got into really different positions to try and make it so that they didn't catch this gay power button stuff on their photographs, and they also wouldn't have to do something like blur it out or something. So, oh boy, you know, it had everything, they were really doing their best to make sure that they didn't catch me in it. So, yeah, I was there. Yeah, you won't see a photograph of me. And then after this, I think it was after this. I'm pretty sure it was after this. It's possible it was during another visit by Bobby to the Manhattan Chess Club. Anyway, we were at 14 East 60th Street in those days. And it was above a, what was a nightclub there? Was it the Stork Club or the, oh, it was one of the big nightclubs of the day. Maybe the biggest nightclub in New York at 14 East 60th Street. And the Manhattan Chess Club was upstairs. And so then there was a house of games on the top floor where they didn't just play chess. They also had backgammon and poker and all sorts of illegal gambling going on and whoopee. Anyway, so they had that going on. And I think it was after this thing with the Rapids, the Manhattan Chess Club, or maybe not. I get into the elevator and Bobby Fischer's in there too. And I look and to my right as I'm standing there, because I get in, there's Jimmy Darren, the singer. He's flanked by 2 huge bodyguards who are glowering at me. And Bobby Fischer is on the other side of the elevator, and he's looking down. I think he's looking at a portable chess set, which we all carried. I carried one too in those days. And he's looking at it. He's like looking at a position and going over it. And so I'm standing there saying, here I am with these two world famous people. Neither one of them knows who the other one is. And ever since then, I've thought, gee, I really should have been bold and said, Bobby Fischer, this is Jimmy Darin, world famous singer. Jimmy Darin, this is Bobby Fischer, the future chess champion of the world. They probably would have both gone, huh? But anyway, I didn't. I wish I had. That's life. August 1971 was a very hectic month for the Gay Activist Alliance. We had a number of demonstrations and ZAP actions. A ZAP is where you would like go in and occupy an office or something like that. Meanwhile, I was preparing for a chess tournament called the New York Summer Amateur that was set for the end of the month. I was a lousy chess player, but I was passionate about it, and I was preparing for this chess tournament. However, things got so hectic that I ended up dropping out of that chess tournament because I had learned from the previous year's New York Summer Amateur that if you're having gay actions, it's best not to also be going to a chess tournament, partly because I was having to carry my chess clock with me at the 1970 riots that we had, and in the middle of that, one moron starts hollering to try and to intimidate the police. He's got a bomb! It's a bomb! You better watch out! This guy has a bomb! Anyway, the Police Power Committee in that August had gotten the GAA membership to vote to have a demo at the Hop Hog Police Station. This was because two cops named Gentles and Juhegan had gone to a gay bar in Long Island and, after sitting there drinking, had started insulting the waiters, and one waiter said something back to them, and they got furious, and they started beating people up. They called other cops, and they arrested everybody, and, you know, we went to court on this, and there was a lot of stuff about this, and we had demos. This was one of the big demos. And so we went to Hop Hog. The cop house is on this highway. It's kind of not quite rural, but it's not that urban at all either. So across from it was an open area where we could park these buses. And getting buses had been a last-minute thing. And the guy who had lost getting the Police Power Committee chairmanship, he had secured the buses at the last minute. And he had secured buses from a place that spoke no English. Neither did the bus drivers. So it was a little interesting. And none of us spoke whatever language they were speaking, by the way. It wasn't some common language. Anyway, so we're there. We're having a demo. And we're walking on the side of the road between the road and the cop house. And his grass there. We're marching up and down. We have signs, blah, blah, blah. The cops are saying, you can't do this. We're saying, it's within our rights. We're doing it. And we had enough people there. They couldn't just easily shove us around. And so we're doing this. And local kids showed up. And they were, you know, they're teenagers. They're rich. They have their own cars. They have actual race cars with racing slick back tires, which isn't even legal. And they're going back and forth. And what happens is they take their cars and they're driving up and down the grass median. Now, there's a grass median between the I think it's the eastbound and the westbound highway. And they're driving up and down in there, and they have a sign that they have. And it's a piece of cardboard, and they've used spray paint to write on it, quote, "Queers suck." And they're driving up and down. They're calling us names, and we're telling them to go bleep themselves. And we also had idiots who decided, oh, look, across the way there, across the two highways, we can go get something to drink. So some guy pulls up and is selling, you know, like a little cart. And they're going and we're saying, no, you can't do that. That's stupid. This is enemy territory. They go there. And so we're trying to herd them back. And meanwhile, the kids show up at the stuff, and we face them down because they wanted to beat these guys up. And so we face them down, and as they leave, they rev up the car so that the racing slicks take the gravel and start pelting everybody with it. Meanwhile, one of our transvestites grabs their sign. And now we go back, and we're demonstrating, and this one person is holding up a sign that says, "Queers suck." And he says, "That's right, queers suck, baby." And there was video of this, but I think it's long gone. And the cops became furious, and they said, "That's an obscene sign. You can't have that." They didn't care that the kids were driving back and forth with this all over the place. Now they're trying to grab it away. A small police riot happened. I got maced, and some civilians showed up, and I kind of committed assault and battery on one of them. He was committing assault on somebody, and I batteried him a lot worse, and he stopped and went away. And anyway, so we had all this stuff going on, and a guy named Charles Birch, who's no longer with us, he got arrested, and he was brutalized by the police. And this was one of those big things that happened, and it happened at the end of August, 50 years ago. In fact, I think it's possibly 50 years ago today, when you're listening to this, that this happened. Ah, yes, my youth and all of our stuff. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Coming up next,
Ralph Nader's Radio Hour.
Next week will be the 35th anniversary program. Whoopee! Enjoy the last waning days of the middle third. And above all, remember what that saying goodbye to the middle third Dormouse said.
Extra cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
When trumpets were mellow and every guy only had one fellow, no need.
Hi, I'm David Kenny of Everything Old is New Again. Every Sunday night at 10, please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again, because everything old is new again. I like it.
To you.
Thank you for thinking of me.
And I thank you.
And I thank you.
Let's say thank you to all you people out there.
Hallelujah.
I want to thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
It's the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
Stand up, stand up. You've been sitting way too long.
Welcome to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. My name is Steve Scrovan, along with my co-host, David Feldman. Hello, David.
Good morning.
And the man of the hour, Ralph Nader. Hello, Ralph.
Well, this is a unique program, as you'll find out.
That's right. It's a unique program because we're going to be dealing with something that Ralph happens to know a lot about. It's part of his lived experience. And I'm going to start by saying that the United States is said to have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We, the people, send representatives to City Hall, state houses, and the White House. So what do we do when our government stops acting for us? In the 1960s and 1970s, liberal activists, including Rachel Carson, Biddy Friedan, Jane Jacobs, and our very own Ralph Nader, saw the government working for powerful interests like big business and big labor while neglecting the average citizen.